Last session, we were looking at the beginning of Solomon's building of the temple from 1 Kings chapter 5. I want to pick up our story today with that same topic, but read it from 2 Chronicles chapter number 2, because we've got some really interesting additional information I'd like for us to cover today. Now keep in mind that we are looking at the fourth year of Solomon's reign, because David had actually put Solomon on the throne early. The fourth year is the year in which David died, and Solomon now feels free to actually build the temple that David was forbidden to build because he was a man of warfare. So we're looking at the year 977 BC, according to my chronology, which is the 480th year of the Exodus, as we will see in just a bit. And it's the springtime of that year. David probably passed away during the winter. 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 1. Now Solomon proposed to build a temple for the name of He Who Is and a royal palace for himself. So Solomon is really going to make a big deal of building up what we call today the Temple Mount. He's going to build God's palace complex, which we call the temple, and then just south of that, which is immediately north of the current city of Jerusalem that David had been reigning from, that's where he's going to build the new palace for himself and all of the government buildings and the meeting places that his kingdom is going to utilize. Verse number 2. Solomon assigned 70,000 men to bear burdens. There's going to be a lot of movement of material, and you need a lot of people for that. And 80,000 to quarry in the hill country. So they're going to use a lot of large stones for the framework of this temple and of the palace complex. And then 3,600 to oversee them. A lot of supervisors to keep all of this organized. Verse 3, we've already talked about from the other parallel from 1 Kings 5. But let's see how the writer of 2 Chronicles puts it. Solomon sent word to Hiram, king of Tur, or Tyre, up to the north. The Phoenicians, who are very skilled in shipbuilding and large building projects. As you dealt with David, my father, and sent him cedar to build himself a house to dwell in, so deal with me. Behold, I am about to build a house for the name of He Who Is My God, and dedicate it to Him for the burning of incense of sweet spices before Him, for the regular arrangement of the showbread, and for burnt offerings morning and evening, on the Sabbaths and the new moons and the appointed feasts of He Who Is Our God, as ordained forever for Israel. Now that's a much more expansive description of what this temple is to be used for. It is the place where worship, corporate worship, national worship is to take place as was originally given by God through Moses to the Israelites. Verse 5, the house that I am to build will be great, for our God is greater than all gods. I'm interested in how Hiram might have responded to that, since he is probably a worshiper of pagan deities, probably a multitude of deities. And here is a young man telling him, the Israeli God is better than any of the other gods. He's the greatest of all gods. That's why he's due a great temple. But we don't get his reaction. Verse 6, but who is able to build him a house, since heaven, even highest heaven, cannot contain him? And who am I to build a house for him, except as a place to make offerings before him? And this phraseology will show up in Solomon's dedication ceremony about let's see, 7 years into the future, that even though he's building this massive, majestic palace for God's worship, God doesn't live in physical houses because he's the creator. And how can even Solomon, as the king, do what is best to honor God, except that which God has told him to do, which is to make a temple? Verse number 7, so now, send me a man skilled to work in gold, silver, bronze, and iron, and in purple, crimson, and blue fabrics, trained also in engraving, to be with the skilled workers who are with me in Judah and Jerusalem, whom David my father provided. So this, we find out, is going to be something he requests from Hiram. Send me a top design expert for all of these areas when we're building this palace, this temple. And let me be able to utilize him in doing the honorable thing before God. Something similar happened in the designing of the tabernacle at the very beginning of Israel's history, where God designated to Moses two guys, but one in particular, that was going to be so well gifted in the area of specialized design that he would bring everything together and make it all beautiful. So Solomon wants someone with expertise to come from Phoenicia to lead in this effort. Verse 8, send me also cedar, cypress, and algum timber from Lebanon. Those are all very fragrant, fine-grained woods from Lebanon. For I know that your servants know how to cut timber in Lebanon, and my servants will be with your servants to prepare timber for me in abundance, for the house that I am to build will be great and wonderful. And you remember we talked about how last time these Phoenicians are going to chop down the great big trees on the slopes of the Lebanon mountains, bring them down to the Mediterranean coast, make them into great big rafts, sail them down south along that coast, break them up probably somewhere around Joppa, and then bring them about a day and a half journey up to Jerusalem and use them in the building of this massive temple complex. Verse 10, I will give for your servants, the woodsmen who cut timber, 20,000 cores of wheat. Now, core is a Hebrew measurement. And so what we're talking about here in total is something like 125,000 bushels of wheat. That's 7.5 million pounds, roughly, or 3,750 tons. All of those are big numbers for us to try to digest. How about this one? Let's use this as an example. Think about train cars. 20,000 cores of crushed wheat is going to fit into about 30 train cars, those hopper cars that you see go by on the train grade. 20,000 cores of barley, so another 30 train cars worth of barley. So that's the two types of grain that were commonly used to make people's bread back at this time. 20,000 baths of wine. And so this is going to be another measurement. It's roughly 1.16 million gallons. And again, to help us understand, that's about 34 train tankers worth of wine that's going to be drunk by these workers. And 20,000 baths of oil. So again, another 34 train tankers worth of oil that's used both in cooking and in light and in personal hygiene. So that's a lot of supplies, and according to the 1 Kings 5 passage, that's a yearly supply for the duration of the active building of the temple. And that's all coming out of Israeli agriculture. Verse number 11. Then Hiram, the king of Tyre, answered in a letter that he sent to Solomon, "Because he who is loves his people, he has made you king over them." Now, I just told you a while ago, I was curious as to how Hiram might have responded to something that Solomon wrote to him. And here we have a hint that Hiram has some sort of respect toward he who is the God of the Israelis. In fact, he may have a special place in his own worship life for the God of the Israelis that David has no doubt talked to him about many, many times. So the king of Tyre says that it is he who is that made you king over the Israeli people because he loves the Israeli people. Verse 12, Hiram also said, "Blessed be he who is God of Israel, who made heaven and earth, who has given King David a wise son, who has discretion and understanding, and who will build a temple for he who is and a royal palace for himself." It would be interesting to know whether or not this Hiram, might have even been on the verge of converting to the belief in the one true God. But as is often the case, we don't have enough information given to us to see whether or not that happened. Verse 13, "Now, I have sent a skilled man who has understanding, Huram Abi, the son of a woman of the daughters of Dan, and his father was a man of Tyre." So Hiram picks out a guy who is half Israeli, half Tyrian. So the son of a woman from the tribe of Dan, so that's the Israeli side, and then dad was apparently somebody who was a professional worker in the trades of design in the Phoenician culture at Tyre. Here's the rest of the information. "He is trained to work in gold, silver, bronze, iron, stone, and wood, and in purple, blue, and crimson fabrics and fine linen, and to do all the engraving and execute any design that may be assigned him with your craftsmen, the craftsmen of my lord David, your father." So exactly what Solomon was looking for. But it just so happens he's also a young man who is tied in with the Israeli people. So that's probably going to prompt him to do a really good job. Verse 15, "Now therefore the wheat and barley, oil and wine, of which my Lord has spoken, let him send it to his servants. We will cut whatever timber you need from Lebanon, bring it to you in rafts by sea to Joppa, that you may take it up to Jerusalem." And so Solomon counted all the resident aliens who were in the land of Israel after the census of them that David his father had taken, and there were about 153,600. So back when David did that illicit census, there was apparently also a secondary counting of non-Israelis living in the land. So Solomon gives the hard labor work to those foreign nationals living inside Israel. Verse 18, 70,000 of them he assigned to bear burdens, 80,000 to quarry in the hill country, and 3,600 as overseers to make the people work. And so now we've got the labor force in place, and it's even organized with the Israelis sending their own people up to help harvest the lumber that's needed. This comes from 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 13. "King Solomon drafted forced labor out of all Israel, and the draft numbered 30,000 men. He sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in shifts. They would be a month in Lebanon and then 2 months at home. Adoniram was in charge of the draft." So This sounds more like these are Israelis that are now being sent as lumberjacks to learn how to work with all this timber. So they spend a month actually working in the timber of Lebanon Mountains, and then 2 more months they're back down in Israeli territory learning how to break up and transport that stuff up to Jerusalem and then turn it into the final product. Some of it'll be support beams, some of it's going to be turned into paneling, others will be turned into actual columns, support columns to hold up roofs. And so they'll just keep rotating in that fashion until the project is completed. Then we have a reminder again, verse 15, Solomon also had 70,000 burden bearers, 80,000 stone cutters, 3,300 chief workers, and the king, at the king's command, they quarried out great costly stones in order to lay the foundation of the house with dressed stones. The main outline, the main footprint of the temple is going to be made of big blocks of quarried stones. And these guys are going to be involved in putting all of those in place. So Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders and the men of Gebel did the cutting and prepared the timber and the stone to build the house. And then we come to the dating. And I think I want to go, well, let's read it here in 1 Kings 6 first. In the 480th year after the people of Israel came out of Egypt, in the 4th year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the 2nd month, he began to build the house of He Who Is. So that helps us understand exactly when the first big blocks were put in place to form the footprint of the temple of He Who Is, designed by David through the power of the Holy Spirit and constructed under the leadership of King Solomon. That translates in the chronology that I work with to May of 977 BC. Now, the location has also been very precisely selected. 2 Chronicles, chapter number 3, verse number 1. Then Solomon began to build the house of He Who Is in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where He Who Is had appeared to David his father at the place that David had appointed on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Now, Mount Moriah, that is the name of this region to the north of the ancient city of Jerusalem, the ancient city of Jebus. It got that name from Abraham coming into that area at God's command to sacrifice his son Isaac. And you remember that the moment that it became clear that Abraham was willing to do this, God stopped him and gave him a substitute ram. Now, on the way up to the site of the sacrifice, Isaac had asked the question, "I see the fire, I see the wood, where's the sacrifice?" And Abraham's response to his son was, "God will see to it." And that is why the place, the region, became known as Moriel first, which is the Hebrew way of saying the place where God, El, will see to it. But once the Israelis moved into the region later, they had the divine name of God at that time, and they substituted a shortened form of God's divine name for the word God in that place name. So now it became Moriah, the place where Yah will see to it. Now, tradition has said that the place where Abraham almost offered Isaac was the exact same place that David built the altar at the time of the plague, marking where the altar of the temple was going to be located. So right there on what is today the Temple Mount. And I believe that the place where David built the altar, which is mentioned right here, is perhaps somewhere within a few hundred feet of that golden dome of the Dome of the Rock Mosque. Some people think it's exactly where that's at, but I think it's possible that the original altar may have been a little bit south and maybe a little bit east of there. A little bit tough to tell because both the Solomonic Temple and the temple that replaced it in the time of the return, Zerubbabel's temple, all of that was totally annihilated. So it's hard to know exactly where the shrine building and the altar were located. Now, before we go on, I want to say I am not altogether convinced that where Abraham nearly offered Isaac is the exact same plot of ground where David built the altar that then became the site of the altar of the temple. I think it's possible that just a little bit farther north and a little bit to the west on that same sort of ridgeline area where Jesus was crucified, where I think the Garden Tomb is located, where Gordon's Calvary is located. I think that might have been the site where Abraham almost offered his son as a sacrifice, because I think the parallelism with God actually offering his son as a sacrifice, that exact same site, seems to be reasonable. But the same region is called Mount Moriah. That whole Temple Mount, and then if you keep following kind of a ridgeline, there's some ups and downs to it, but you will eventually get to the Garden Tomb area. All right, so that's just my opinion, and I want to bring it up. For our purposes, just think of where the Golden Dome of the Rock is located today. Think of that being effectively where these first stones are being laid, somewhere in that general vicinity. And then we have the reminder again, he began in the second month of the fourth year of his reign. Now we start having some measurements. And it says here in 2 Chronicles chapter number 3, these are Solomon's measurements for building the house of God. The length in cubits of the old standard. And I want us to highlight that right now, real quick. Typically, when we read about cubits in our Bible, our footnotes will give the idea that the Hebrew cubit was from the length of the arm, from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger, of an average-sized man. And 18 inches is what that's typically presented as. Just so happens, I'm about 5'9". That's about average for Americans. And my cubit is exactly 18 inches. So that's usually the measurement used when we translate these into English standards. But the mention here in Chronicles of the old standard of cubit makes me think that we're talking about the royal Egyptian cubit, which is longer. It's about, I think, 20.7 inches in length, as the average understanding of it. And it was the standard used in the time of Moses when the tabernacle was built, when the Ark of the Covenant was designed. And the Ark of the Covenant is going to be brought into this new temple. So I suspect that Solomon decided to use the exact same measurement standard that the Ark was built with and use the Egyptian royal cubit. And as I give you the measurements and translate them into our English standard that we use today, the reason why mine are longer than the footnotes that you might be having or the notes that you might be seeing in commentaries that you look at is because I'm using that longer cubit because of the Second Chronicles passage. Okay. We've only got about a minute left, and so at this point, let's just pop over to 1 Kings 6:2 and finish up with the overall measurements. The house that King Solomon built for He Who Is was 60 cubits long. That's an interior measurement. And so that's 103.5 feet. It was 20 cubits wide. That's 34.5 feet interior measurement. And it was 30 cubits high, 51.75 feet high at the ceiling on the inside. So the exterior measurements are going to be a little bit bigger than that. We can't be exactly sure how much bigger than that, but these are the interior measurements. And you can see that this is just a larger version of the shrine building of the tabernacle. And tomorrow we'll come back and we'll start looking at some of the other measurements involved in this grand and glorious palace of God.